Chapter 10. A swim at the Lido, and Lansing seized the opportunity to get back to his book. The quietness of the great echoing place gave him a foretaste of the solitude to come. By mid-August all their party would be scattered. The Hickses off on a cruise to Crete and the Aegean, Fred Gillow on the way to his moor, Strefford to stay with friends in Cabrie till his annual visit to Northumberland in September. One by one the others would follow, and Lansing and Susie be left alone in the great sun-proof palace, alone under the star-laden skies, alone with the great orange moon still theirs. Above the bell, tower of San Giorgio, the novel, in that blessed quiet, would unfold itself as harmoniously as his dreams. He wrote on, forgetful of the passing hours, till the door opened, and he heard a step behind him. The next moment two hands were clasped over his eyes, and the air was full of Mrs. Vanderlyn's last new scent. "You dear thing, I'm just off, you know," she said. "Lucy told me you were working, and I forbade her to call you down. She and Streffy are waiting to take me to the station, and I've run up to say goodbye. Ellie, dear." Full of compunction, Lansing pushed aside his writing and started up, but she pressed him back into his seat. "No, no. I should never forgive myself if I'd interrupted you. I oughtn't to have come up. Susie didn't want me to. But I had to tell you, you dear. Dot, I had to thank you." In her dark traveling dress and hat, so discreetly conspicuous, so negligent and so studied, with a veil masking her paint and gloves hiding her rings, she looked younger, simpler, more natural than he had ever seen her. Poor Ellie, such a good fellow, after all. "To thank me? For what? For being so happy here?" He laughed, taking her hands. She looked at him, laughed back, and flung her arms about his neck. "For helping me to be so happy elsewhere, you and Susie, you two blessed darlings," she cried, with a kiss on his cheek. Their eyes met for a second, then her arms slipped slowly downward, dropping to her sides. Lansing sat before her like a stone. "Oh," she gasped, "why do you stare so? Didn't you know? Dot dot?" They heard Strefford's shrill voice on the stairs. "Lie, where the deuce are you? Susie's in the gondola. You'll miss the train." Lansing stood up and caught Mrs. Vanderlyn by the wrist. "What do you mean? What are you talking about?" "Oh, nothing. Dot dot dot, but you were both such bricks about the letters. Dot, and when Nelson was here too, Nick, don't hurt my wrist so. I must run." He dropped her hand and stood motionless, staring after her, and listening to the click of her high heels as she fled across the room, and along the echoing corridor. When he turned back to the table he noticed that a small Morocco case had fallen among his papers. In falling it had opened, and before him, on the pale velvet lining, lay a scarf pin set with a perfect pearl. He picked the box up, and was about to hasten after Mrs. Vanderlyn. It was so like her to shed jewels on her path. When he noticed his own initials on the cover, he dropped the box, as if it had been a hot coal, and sat for a long while gazing at the golden L, which seemed to have burned itself into his flesh. At last he roused himself and stood up. X, with a sigh of relief, Susie drew the pins from her hat and threw herself down on the lounge. The ordeal as he had dreaded was over, and Mr. and Mrs. Vanderlyn had safely gone their several ways. Poor Ellie was not noted for prudence, and when life smiled on her, she was given to betraying her gratitude too openly. But thanks to Susie's vigilance and, no doubt, to Strefford's tacit cooperation, the dreaded 24 hours were happily over. Nelson Vanderlyn had departed without a shadow on his brow, and though Ellie's, when she came down from bidding Nick goodbye, had seemed to Susie less serene than usual, she became her normal self, as soon as it was discovered that the red Morocco bag with her jewel box was missing. Before it had been discovered in the depths of the gondola they had reached the station, and there was just time to thrust her into her leaper, from which she was seen to wave an unperturbed farewell to her friends. Well, my dear, we've been through, Strefford remarked with a deep breath as the St. Moritz Express rolled away. Oh, Susie sighed in mute complicity. Then, as if to cover her self-betrayal. Poor darling, she does so like what she likes. Yes, even if it's a rotten bounder, Strefford agreed. A rotten bounder? Why, I thought that it was still young Davenant. Lord, no, not for the last 6 months. Didn't she tell you? Susie felt herself redden. Didn't ask her, ask her? You mean you didn't let her? I didn't let her. And I don't let you, Susie added sharply, as he helped her into the gondola. Oh, all right. I dare say you're right. It simplifies things, Strefford placidly acquiesced. She made no answer, and in silence they glided homeward. Now, in the quiet of her own room, Susie lay and pondered on the distances he had traveled during the last year. Strefford had read her mind with his usual penetration. It was true that there had been a time when she would have thought it perfectly natural that Ellie should tell her everything, that the name of young Davenant's successor should be confided to her as a matter of course. Apparently even Ellie had been obscurely aware of the change, for after a first attempt to force her confidences on Susie as he had contented herself with vague expressions of gratitude, elusive smiles and sighs, and the pretty surprise of the sapphire bangle slipped onto her friend's wrist in the act of their farewell embrace. The bangle was extremely handsome. Susie, who had an auctioneer's eye for values, knew to a fraction the worth of those deep convex stones alternating with small emeralds and brilliance. She was glad to own the bracelet, and enchanted with the effect it produced on her slim wrist. Yet, even while admiring it, and rejoicing that it was hers, as he had already transmuted it into specie, and reckoned just how far it would go toward the paying of domestic necessities. For whatever came to her now interested her only as something more to be offered up to Nick. The door opened and Nick came in. Dusk had fallen, and she could not see his face, but something in the jerk of the door handle roused her ever-wakeful apprehension. She hurried toward him with outstretched wrist. Look, dearest, wasn't it too darling of Ellie? She pressed the button of the lamp that lit her dressing table, and her husband's face started unfamiliarly out of the twilight. She slipped off the bracelet, and held it up to him. Oh, I can go you one better, he said with a laugh, and pulling a Morocco case from his pocket he flung it down among the scent bottles. Susie opened the case automatically, staring at the pearl, because she was afraid to look again at Nick. Ellie gave you this? She asked at length. Yes. She gave me this. There was a pause. Oh, do you mind telling me, Lansing continued in the same dead-level tone, exactly for what services we've both been so handsomely paid? The pearl is beautiful, Susie murmured, to Guy in time, while her head spun round with unimaginable terrors. So are your sapphires. Though, on closer examination, my services would appear to have been valued rather higher than yours. Would you be kind enough to tell me just what they were? Susie threw her head back and looked at him. What on earth are you talking about, Nick? Why shouldn't Ellie have given us these things? Do you forget that it's like our giving her a pen wiper or a button hook? What is it you are trying to suggest? It had cost her a considerable effort to hold his eyes while she put the questions. Something had happened between him and Ellie that was evident one of those hideous unforeseeable blunders that may cause one's cleverest plans to crumble at a stroke, and again Susie shuddered at the frailty of her bliss. But her old training stood her in good stead. There had been more than one moment in her past when everything somebody else's everything had depended on her keeping a cool head and a clear glance. It would have been a wonder if now, when she felt her own everything at stake, as he had not been able to put up as good a defense. What is it? She repeated impatiently, as Lansing continued to remain silent. That's what I'm here to ask, he returned, keeping his eyes as steady as she kept hers. Here's no reason on earth, as you say, why Ellie shouldn't give us presents as expensive presents as she likes, and the pearl is a beauty. All I ask is, for what specific services were they given? 4. Allowing for all the absence of scruple that marks the intercourse of truly civilized people, you'll probably agree that there are limits. At least up to now there have been limits. ... I really don't know what you mean. I suppose Ellie wanted to show that she was grateful to us for looking after Clarissa. But she gave us all this in exchange for that, didn't she? He suggested, with a sweep of the hand around the beautiful shadowy room. Whole summer of it if we choose. Susie smiled. Apparently she didn't think that enough. What a doting mother. It shows the store she sets upon her child. Well, don't you set store upon Clarissa? Clarissa's exquisite, but her mother didn't mention her in offering me this recompense. Susie lifted her head again. Whom did she mention? Vanderlyn, said Lansing. Vanderlyn? Nelson? Yes, and some letters. Something about letters, what is it, my dear, that you and I have been hired to hide from Vanderlyn? Because I should like to know, Nick broke out savagely, if we've been adequately paid. Susie was silent. She needed time to reckon up her forces, and study her next move, and her brain was in such a whirl of fear, that she could at last only retort. Had is it that Ellie said to you? Lansing laughed again. That's just what you'd like to find out, isn't it? In order to know the line, to take in making your explanation. The sneer had an effect that he could not have foreseen, and that Susie herself had not expected. Oh, don't let us speak to each other like that. She cried, and sinking down by the dressing table she hid her face in her hands. It seemed to her now that nothing mattered, except that their love for each other, their faith in each other, should be saved from some unhealable hurt. She was willing to tell Nick everything she wanted to tell him everything, if only she could be sure of reaching a responsive chord in him. But the scene of the cigars came back to her and benumbed her. If only she could make him see that nothing was of any account as long as they continued to love each other. His touch fell compassionately on her shoulder. Poor child, don't, he said. Their eyes met, but his expression checked the smile breaking through her tears. And you see, he continued, that we've got to have this thing out. She continued to stare at him through a prism of tears. Can't while you stand up like that, she stammered, childishly. As he had cowered down again into a corner of the lounge, but Lansing did not seat himself at her side. He took a chair facing her, like a caller on the farther side of a stately tea tray. Will that do? He asked with a stiff smile, as if to humor her. Nothing will do, as long as you're not you. Not me? She shook her head wearily. That's the use. You accept things theoretically, and then when they happen. ... What things? What has happened? A sudden impatience mastered her. What did he suppose, after all? You know all about Ellie. We used to talk about her often enough in old times, she said. Ellie and young Davenant? Young Davenant, or the others? ... Or the others. But what business was it of ours? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.